This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
It's time to cross now to SBS's chief football analyst, Craig Foster. Craig, thank you so much for coming on the show.
That's okay, guys. Pleasure.
Craig, how have you been enjoying the tournament so far?
Yeah, look, I've been loving it. I've enjoyed seeing what a young player brought to it. I think the first game against France was really great. A lot of great stories come out and interesting lines and some predictable issues around, treatment of female players, including in coverage and on social media and all these things, which I think are very important. I enjoyed the things around Sam and this whole discussion around, abuse of women and girls online, which I think she importantly drew some attention to. We talked about that, I think, with the I can't recall her name, to be honest, but the AFLW player who was photographed and was in the paper and then had a whole range of abuse on social media of this wonderful photo of her and the athleticism. We talked about it then, and I was sharing some work from, I think, Human Rights Watch and Amnesty around the abuse of women and girls online, which is just, just absolutely horrendous. So I thought that was important. So I really like when all of these broader social issues are kind of magnified, amplified through the game when we have these major tournaments, and there's been a few, which has been good.
Craig, it's Josh here. I think it's Taylor Harris you're referring to from the AFLW. It's an interesting parallel you draw, and it seems as if this tournament, whether it's fair on the players or not, seems to have more at stake almost socially in their own countries. I've heard Megan Rapinoe from the US WNT come out in an interview and saying, she was asked what her goal was at the World Cup, and she said, to leave the field an equal playing field or a better environment for young girls in her own country once she's finished playing. I mean, that's such an incredible weight to carry.
That's very true. Look, the women's game in that respect is really accelerating now, which is great. But I would imagine it's probably maybe 20 years, perhaps 30, behind exactly where the men's game was. And the men have been through this exact transition. So only a couple of years ago in 2016, when I went back as the chairman of the PFA in Australia and I changed the constitution to mandate that women would have a quota on the board and the executive and brought them in inside the organisation. My message to them at that time was exactly the same. Look, we've been through this. And so now this generation have this burden. It is a burden, but it's also a responsibility they'll be very proud of later, where they have to step forward now and they have to advocate for their fellow professionals for further investment in the game and for gender equality. Is that fair? No. What I like is you tend to see some of the leading athletes really step forward and embrace it. And it doesn't hurt their on-field performance. I mean, look at the Matildas. They're advocating for fairness in prize money. And that is an incredibly important issue because it can be used then for a broader investment. And the USA have been in this space for a lot of years. It clearly hasn't. I would imagine in some respects it's brought them even closer together and it's given them a sense of purpose beyond just wearing the shirt and having a wonderful career. So it can actually be really positive.
And what did you make of, Sam Kerr's recent comments and then, advocacy online?
I thought there was two aspects to it. I was kind of a bit confused. Look, I don't spend a lot of time on social media having a look, what everything's being said. I was delighted that the following day she talked about the haters and the critics, and I just wonder whether they're two different issues. I was pleased that she was very forthright. I think that's who she is, and I do think that athletes have been far too sanitised, whether that's in relation to their social work off the field or on, or whether it's around their personality. And I think there's a lot to be discussed there for football after the tournament. I just thought at the moment in relation to criticism of the team, it's not really of any great value to discuss now, but I do think there's a really good discussion there. So when it came to the haters, I was delighted that she shared that tweet afterwards. I saw what happened to Lucy in Russia. We've talked about the AFLW player. I've read the material in relation to women and girls online.
And I love that Sam Kerr and the Matildas have been able to take a leading role now in amplifying this issue. And I hope that players and the PFA and perhaps the AAA, which is the players' governing body in Australia, professional athletes, might take some leadership on that issue. I was thinking about that, that perhaps the PFA and FFA could have done something. I mean, the PFA got their hands full, obviously. But in future, these tournaments would actually be a wonderful opportunity to, let's say, for instance, that the PFA were to monitor all of the social media accounts of the 23 players who are there and, you know, create some type of log or some type of research into the abuse that they actually do receive. I think that could be really valuable because it's at these times, and we saw with Lucy last year, when they're in the public eye and very prominent is when they tend to be attacked. So in that way, sport can, you know, the Matildas can use these moments to educate and to help others. So I was pleased about that. When it came to Sam's, commentary about, in inverted commas, critics, I'm not quite sure what she was referring to. I did hear, for instance, former players like Heather Garriock have strong opinions around, you know, the tactical setup of the team, and I thought they were both valid and very important. I think that all of those former players have an obligation, responsibility to do that. And I'm questioning, and I've kind of got my eye on for a discussion later around what the environment is around the team, because we saw a little bit of that in recent years with the Socceroos as well. And I think they need to realise that it's not their team. It's wonderful playing for the country, but it's actually the nation's team. And they have a, put it this way, a lot of people were talking about the defensive principles, and we spent a lot of time, you know, trying to, if you like, educate or encourage all of Australia to talk about these things and understand it to a high level. And then if the players come out and say, well, you know, all the critics talking about all the defending, it kind of defeats the purpose of creating a literate football country, right? Yeah. However, having said all that, I just think it's a discussion for down the track. I don't think the players have their head in that space. And I think it's more a matter of FFA, the environment they put around the players and you know, the culture that you have within your national team unit and FFA, which I think is very much anti-critical, anti-criticism anyway. And finally, guys, I might just say this. The thing about that is, the you know, it's why I support your programs and all the others and try and give as much time as possible. If you look in recent years, you know, we've got some significant challenges in the game, whether it's crowds or TV, whatever the case is. And in fact, the actual quantum of media coverage that we have of the game, I would suggest, has gone down a bit. And one of the reasons is because critical views have been frowned upon, and in fact, through the Lowy FFA era, they cracked down on it very heavily, including with News Limited outlets and Fox and others. So in actual fact, you know, the journalists aren't there just to write positive things. Journalists aren't cheerleaders. And I heard Elise Kellen, and I think it's actually damaging our game. We've actually got less coverage now. Elise Kellen Knight spoke beautifully on it, I thought, but she said, look, you know, people have a right to have their views, and of course we haven't really been defending well and all these things is great. But then she did say, but look, I think we've won back a lot of support, and if I was to say something to Elise or to the team, I would say, no, don't conflate critical views of the way you play or the tactics with support. They're not, they're different. People always support you. You're the most loved national team we have. But that doesn't mean that people can't take a view of the way that your defensive principles are or are not working. So, you know, that's kind of where I think players can go down the wrong avenue, and that's a matter of leadership around the team, in my view, which I think is pretty clearly lacking inside FFA for quite a long time.
Craig, I think you've hit on a number of things there. Yeah, I think it's dangerous to, as you say, equivocate the, you know, online abuse to criticism of the team to not supporting the team, sort of almost three different things. And
that's right.
I mean, it's almost a fact, you know, a function of how passionate people are about the Matildas now, that is the why they have all these opinions. Why are they, you know, engaging in this debate, whether it's in an SBS studio or on Twitter?
Yeah, that's right. And look, you know, this discussion's a really, really important one. So, you know, I thank Sam for making it happen. Now, the thing is, in that moment, of course, she's got, you know, they've had all of these things online. I do think it was a unique circumstance because she had the Stagic issue and you know, all of those issues coming out, and there was a lot of vitriol, so I could understand why she would be upset anyway. And equally in that moment, you know, she just makes a statement, and, you know, here we are still talking about it, but it's important for that reason. And what I've said since is, look, that's wonderful that she did so, great. She has every right to do that. However, I think the team needs to have a little bit more sophisticated view. I don't expect the players to get that themselves. I think you have to have people around it who should make that happen. But equally, I've been at pains to say the Matildas also need to realise that expectations have risen, and as their performances rise, as they have a deeper, a larger, broader fan base, and as more of Australia come to be, you know, have a deep interest in their female national team, you have to expect that that's going to happen. The expectations are higher. So I think there's some adjustment, perhaps on both sides, but ultimately, aside from, you know, this concept of abuse and this heinous sexual abuse and homophobia and all this disgusting stuff, the actual analysis of the game is both positive and negative. But that doesn't mean people's support ever wavers. I don't believe it does. So, yeah, it's a really important issue for the game that I think FFA need to get hold of. And because they've been very sensitive to criticism for a very long time, my concern is that that's filtered through to our national teams, and it shouldn't. I'd like to see some good leadership in there inside FFA saying, guys, it's got actually nothing to do with you. We want Australia having a whole broad range of opinions. Tamika Yallop yesterday said perfectly. She said, looks absolutely great as long as it's not personal. And I think that's right. Like when Robbie Cruz stuff in Russia went to the family, when it goes down that disgusting area, all you have to do is, you know, that's when the whole game should come out. So, no, that's totally unacceptable. But we want everyone discussing all of these. I actually thought the discussion around the defensive principles and the line and offside trap and all those things was absolutely brilliant for the game.
And Craig, one other thing before we move on to talking about the upcoming game against Jamaica. Do you think that the Women's World Cup is also reflective of the disparity between countries? Like, for example, with the USA defeating Thailand 13-0 and maybe where Thailand are at?
Oh, it undoubtedly is. And the broader issue is really this. What are the expectations of the female players around the world of the rights that they have under FIFA to investment in the game, okay? So we saw the disparity is in large part due to the disparity investment in both countries, okay? And of course, US has the college system, and they, you know, they've been going a very long time. There's many countries in the world where the investment is very low, where the professional game is struggling for resources and for capital and so on. And what you've got is a national team of Australia feeling that the only way to make a difference in terms of the broader investment is that they have to take a stand themselves, which should never be the case. So the broader question is, who is supposed to be advocating for female football globally? Who is responsible for that? I don't think there is anyone. You know, we have PFA are a member of FIFPro, is the global players body, but the US national team, the most powerful team in the world, are not members. They have their own union in US, and therefore FIFPro don't bargain for them. They don't represent them. The Australians now have said to FIFPro essentially, look, we feel as though we need to do it ourselves. So I think FIFPro have got serious question marks around, you know, their level of advocacy of women's football. I think that's being questioned by, you know, women around the world, I think rightly. So to me, I think the women have to have a really good look at it and say, OK, what do countries like Thailand need here? It's a wonderful story that Bob Marley's daughter, Sadella, has funded the team. But, you know, we've seen that with Matildas for decades. I mean, in 2015, they had to have a strike in order to just get some type of decent conditions here. So therefore, it's the Australians who are in the position saying, we're not prepared to do that anymore. We're going to assert our rights. And I'm looking at this World Cup, this broader discussion is, okay, what should FIFA be doing for women's football globally? Because at the moment, it's completely arbitrary. What they did is they said, well, we think it's a good idea to uplift male prize money by 42 million or 48, whatever it was, and the women by 15, despite the fact that they've got a statutory responsibility to gender equality, right? Non-discrimination. So therefore, I think that Ada Hegerberg, who's a very strong personality, I think Amandine Henry, I think Megan Rapinoe and Carly Lloyd, these legends, I think Sam Kerr and Elise, I think they should be getting together and saying, okay, what are we entitled to as a female and girls game globally, and how are we going to assert those rights? Because at the moment, that discussion is not happening, and they're reliant on FIFA coming up with new conditions. And all FIFA says, oh, of course, we're going to have a discussion in 3 months. We sign an MOU with UN Women, and they'll come out and say, oh, okay, well, here's another bit of this and bit of that. That can't happen. I think that you need to have this really broad discussion now and say, okay, well, what are we entitled to as a women's game? You know, what is the percentage of the global game should be attributed to us right now? And on that basis, where's it going to go? How are we going to implement that? And what do all of our competitions look like? I think it's a really interesting time. And by the way, who's going to advocate for that for us? And how's that going to be run? And in many other sports, there's been very many different models as to how women's sport's been run. And I think all those models are open. I don't take it as read that Gianni Infantino has any commitment whatsoever. And nor Fatma Samoura, by the way, who I've met there and dealt with recently on the Hakim case, and I think is a very nice lady, but she is politically minded. She operates within an Infantino paradigm, which means no one is going to advocate properly for women around the world right now unless they do it themselves.
Completely agree, Craig. I think relying on FIFA to instigate change is, you know, never going to lead you anywhere fast, but narrowing our focus to the game tomorrow morning against Jamaica. Again, injury problems in the side. Claire Polkinghorne's out again. Tamika Yalof has been ruled out of a starting role. What do you think, you know, the selection will look like? And what have you made of the choices that you know, Ante Milicic has been sort of forced into with all the unavailabilities?
Well, I thought he did well in the last game. I mean, he was under a lot of pressure, right? And that'll be good for him. He's still a young coach. It's because his first World Cup, his first major, you know, head role, aside from the under-20 males. So it was immense pressure for him. And then what happened is Claire got injured. He had to reshuffle the back line, and his back line hadn't been working well at all. And they were struggling with the principles that he was trying to put into place, which I think in hindsight, there wasn't really enough time for him to do so. I think he realised that. He changed them for the last game. In some ways, having a couple of different players in that back line, you know, having to bring Steph inside to the number four position might have helped him in that respect, because he was able to say to them, look, guys, we've got only, you know, half of our back four is different. We're not going to be able to apply what we've been practicing since Turkey. So let's just go back to, you know, what's reasonably normal. So I think it kind of worked in his favour, but he stood up under the pressure really well. He didn't panic at 2-0 down. I saw him pulling Chloe Legazzo, talking about a couple of things that he saw. I think it was about the run in behind the line. So I, you know, I was really pleased for him, because I thought it was a big moment. It could have gone very bad for him, and that can be bad for a coaching career. And so I was delighted for him and the team. For this one, I don't think it's bad that there are more injuries, including to Tamika. I think she's been one of our really key players, has done a great job. But you want to have the confidence to be making some changes in this game and resting people anyway. For the you should be winning it. I reviewed the last two games of Jamaica yesterday, and it's difficult to see them creating too much. You should be able to create reasonably easily to be, you know, and at number five, number six in the world, you should be winning this game, even with 3, 4, 5 changes in the lineup. And therefore, I think that's probably positive. I will give Steph another game in there at number four. It might give them an opportunity to play someone else left back rather than KK, and perhaps KK inside in number six. I certainly hope so anyway, because I do believe when we hit big teams in the knockout stage, perhaps quarterfinal, she's going to be needed there. I don't think the midfield operates anywhere near as well without KK in that position. So it should all be positive, and, you know, they just need to put on a really execute. It's well timed, actually, because they kind of had a, you know, ordinary against Italy with some real worries because the defence was affecting the overall confidence and cohesion, I think. And then, not the players, I'm talking about the way of defending. The second game was wonderful, but still a few concerns. This should be really, I think, a confidence builder. You know, just execute really well, get a good win and moving on with great confidence. And by that time, Italy's completely forgotten. And then you're in the round of 16 and let's go, you know, giddy up. That's where Australia wants to be.
And Craig, you touch on some of the concerns. What do you think the Matildas might need to tweak and work on before they head into the knockout stage where, you know, they could come up against the likes of the host nation, France?
Yeah, that's going to be, they're going to be really big tests. You know, I don't think at the, as yet we're playing, you know, let's hope we're going to do what is a traditional team that goes all the way through the tournament, as you know, to semi-final or beyond, who tend to improve throughout. I think, you know, we're relying a lot on balls from wide areas at the moment, and we're not being able to really play through the middle. We don't have a lot of split passes or through passes, these types of things that you'd like to see with that bit of variation. I wonder whether he might play Katrina Gorry against Jamaica. It just depends whether he thinks he might need her later in the tournament. But I think you probably want to give more midfielders, you know, some time just in case you get one or two more injuries anyway. The reason I say that is they play a 4-4-2, and so, you know, that third player or that number 10 against Jamaica can just cause havoc. That's basically what Italy did. And they, you know, when you play only two players in the centre of midfield, and against strong fullbacks that Australia has, means they're wide and their fielders can't come too far inside. It means you should be able to just pull them to pieces. And so I think it's going to be a much different game in terms of possession and Australia's ability to pull them around the park and so on. But it's that creative aspect that is a little bit of a worry at the moment because, you know, look at the goals we scored the other night and what did we create aside from that? Well, we had a great header from Chloe Legazzo, who's done great getting in the box in those positions. But aside from that, you know, not as much as we'd like.
Craig, you said the magic word, I think. Katrina Gorry, I thought I was alone on Katrina Gorry Island, just me and Ante Jukic, but I really hope she gets a run in this game. You know, it's been an absolute pleasure having him on the show. He's just the most insightful guy on so
very
many levels tactically,
with his time.
And you know, it's he's and also just talking about the player rights and so forth. You know, I think it's a huge issue and something confronting the game. Yes, I think we've just got Craig Forster back. You know, just lost you for a second, Craig, but thank you so much for joining us. I hope Katrina Gorry gets a run in this game because I think she's a different kind of midfielder that we haven't really been giving an opportunity to in most of our national sides.
Yeah, so I thought John Aloisi said it correctly the other day when he, you know, did a bit of analysis on Optus where he said, look, you know, our team has been really set up to go really quickly on transitions, and that means Caitlin Ford in that number 10 position as well, of course. A lot of speed, getting behind quickly, but, of course, teams have taken that away from us. Mm. And that's one reason why we're able to get the ball wide, but we're just getting a lot of crosses in, you know, and trying to make something happen in that way. Whereas Katrina Gorry is that player who can get in between those areas and perhaps find passes that we're not so used to. And I do think that against the better teams, it's likely that we're going to need that. Even if she was to come off the bench, you know, let's say, for instance, that you're planning that you might have to play against a France or someone strong quarterfinal or something, then, you know, in the second half, might you need someone who's able to, you know, find those little passes? I think it's highly likely. And so there's no doubt now with Jamaica being the third game, you know, I think Ante's got to be, no question, he will be just projecting a little bit further ahead. And hopefully the team that we see starting tomorrow should give us a very good sense of which players he thinks might have to play a role against stronger teams, you know, in the course of the next couple of weeks.
Well, Craig, you've been very generous with your time. And as I mentioned to you, I love your analysis because you're so insightful and you are really playing an important role in educating the country on, you know, many of the football terms and how the game is played. So thank you again for coming on Evenings on FNR. And we look forward to watching you throughout the remainder of the Women's World Cup.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Well, my pleasure. Let everyone tune in tomorrow and let's see how the Matildas go. Let's hope for a great one.